You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about Galileo. Last weekend, a NASA program officially came to an end, and it really did it in a particularly dramatic way. The spacecraft Galileo, which had been orbiting the planet Jupiter for about 8 years, was deliberately sent on a collision course with that massive planet and was collecting data, I understand, all the way to the very end and sending it back. In fact, after it had crashed into the planet, the data was still arriving. Joining me now to talk about the mission and what was learned from it is Rosalie Lopez. She's a volcanologist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, and she was one of the scientists eagerly studying all that data that came back from Galileo over the years, especially data on the volcanic moon Io. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
What was it like last weekend? Must have been a sad time out there at JPL, huh?
It was a mixture. It was, I can call it bittersweet. We were very, very pleased that this spacecraft performed so well right up to the end. And at the same time, it was saying goodbye to an old friend and to the team. So there were a few tears.
Tell us about that mission. You know, I remember when it was launched, it was sort of snake bit from the very beginning, wasn't it? There was that the main antenna that refused to open.
Oh, yes, and even before that, I think that's what's so great about Galileo is that it was the mission that wouldn't give up, right? Galileo's problem started when the space shuttle Challenger blew up, and Galileo was supposed to be launched in 1987, right after the Challenger. And so the launch was delayed by 2 years, and also there were new safety considerations for the next shuttle launch, and Galileo could not have the booster rocket that they had planned to use. So for a while, it looked like Galileo couldn't even get from Earth to Jupiter. It wouldn't have enough boost, and a new trajectory had to be worked out. So the problems started a long time ago, and the team managed to get around everyone.
And so let's talk about some of the highlights of the mission. What would you say? I mean, it explored the moons. What were its biggest contributions?
Well, Galileo had a lot of science achievements. Because I work with solid surfaces with satellites, perhaps I'm biased towards the moons. And so I'd say there were very surprising discoveries about the four Galilean satellites. Io, of course, is my favorite, is the volcanic moon. We found many more volcanoes on Io than we expected, mm-hmm. and also that the lava was a lot hotter than we expected. Europa, we found that it probably has an ocean of liquid water underneath Panisi crust, and that may be true of Ganymede and Callisto as well, the next 2 moons further out. And Ganymede has a magnetic field, which was also a surprise. And so these four moons were, although Voyager had flown by them in 1979, Galileo revealed a lot of new surprises.
Thank you for correcting my Io. I always get that one. Of all the moons, of all the satellites, of all the planets, I never remember how to pronounce that one.
Actually, there is no right or wrong way.
Is that right?
Yeah, some scientists say Io, some say Io. And
I feel
Greek,
better now.
Yes, in fact, a Greek colleague of mine said that from the ancient Greek, it would probably be more similar to Io than Io. So you're probably right, and I'm not.
I'm sure over the years I've heard it pronounced so many different ways. I don't remember the last one I heard pronounced. Was this one of the last of the bigger satellite, the bigger robots, not the smaller, faster, cheaper ones, but the old-fashioned?
That's right. Galileo was a superb example of the, let's say the way things used to be done.
You wanted to say the way it should be done, didn't you?
Galileo was very well done. In fact, we have another mission very similar to Galileo, a similar spacecraft going to Saturn right now, the Cassini mission. And that's another large spacecraft with a lot of science instruments. You know, and Galileo was, it was designed so well that it withstood a lot more radiation dosage than we thought it was going to. The Jupiter probe survived longer than we thought it would. It was an amazing performer.
Yeah. 1-800-989-8255, talking about Galileo, if you want to talk a little bit about space and this mission. That was the other problem as it was getting close, wasn't it? It was getting bombarded with all this radiation, and yet it survived.
That's right. In fact, the spacecraft, we had only planned to do one close flyby of Io, because that's where the closer to Jupiter is where the radiation environment is most intense. If you were at Io in one day, you'd receive 4,000 times the little dose of radiation, and that's not good for spacecraft either. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Galileo did numerous flybys of Io, and six, if I have the number correct here, I remember every single one of them and how nervous we were, that the spacecraft might not survive, we did flybys in 1995 when we got to Jupiter, and then two in 1999, one in 2000, two in 2001, and one in 2002, and the spacecraft still survived.
Wow! Now the decision was made to crash the spacecraft into Jupiter, to send it on its way into Jupiter. Why was that decision made, and what kind of information was it still sending back? I understand it was still transmitting right up to the last moment.
Right. To answer your first question, in fact, Galileo, it's interesting, it sort of sealed its own fate. It was Galileo that revealed that one of the Galilean satellites, Europa, has most likely a ocean of liquid water underneath an icy crust. And because Europa suffers from some tidal heating, which in fact is what causes the volcanoes on Io, we think there is heat and there is water. And those are two of the ingredients you need for life. So Galileo raised this possibility of some kind of life form might exist on this moon, and we did not want to contaminate it by leaving Galileo around the Jupiter system and running the risk that one day it might actually impact Europa. So the decision was made to, since we're out of fuel, we couldn't do anything else with the spacecraft, to just send it into Jupiter where it vaporized and was, the safest decision to make. And yes, Galileo was collecting what we call fields and particles data, that is information about Jupiter's magnetic field and the environment around Jupiter right up to the end. In fact, the engineers are working at the moment in recovering the last minutes of data, because the signal was kind of weak. They should but we should be able to extract all that.
Very, very interesting. 1-800-989-8255. I think, as you mentioned, Europa is one of the most interesting places, one of the most interesting Galilean moons, because, it might have that primordial as water there. It might have some primordial soup of life under the ice, if there's internal heating, perhaps.
Yes, that's possible. of course, we don't know that for sure, but it raised that possibility. And so Europa became one of the places in the solar system that is a prime candidate for us to explore, looking for signs of life.
What was that? In 2001, the Space Odyssey, and then in 2010, they sent probes to the moons, the moons of Jupiter. Did Arthur C. Clarke know about these things? I mean, the possibility there might be life on these. And was it Europa he sent the spaceship to? I don't remember.
I think it was.
Isn't that amazing?
It's absolutely amazing, actually, that Arthur C. Clarke was able to foresee so much that was eventually discovered. So, in fact, 2001 is very dear to my heart. I was quite young when that film came out, and I wanted to be an astronomer and work for NASA, so that was a great source of inspiration.
Yeah, I remember it, too. Talking with Rosalie Lopez at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. So have you followed the life of this craft from the very beginning and on the drawing board stage before?
No, actually, I arrived at JPL in 1989, a couple of months before Galileo was launched. So, in fact, I did not have to suffer all the trials and tribulations of getting Galileo to launch. And but, you know, I did have to go through the loss of the high-gain antenna, which, again, for a while, it things looked really bad for us. But we managed to reprogram the processors on board and the instruments on board to do things like data compression and increase the data rate. And but all this data that Galileo sent and all these discoveries, were done at very low data rates, about 160 bits per second.
Yeah.
And so the kids these days laugh.
That's slower than the slowest modem we have.
Right, that's right. And the processors on board of Galileo have less power than your first PCs. So, even your cell phone is now more advanced.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so the technology on Earth had to keep up with it, did it not, as it got further away so we could hear it?
Right. Well, but, we couldn't modify the hardware
right,
that was in the
right.
spacecraft.
Right.
So, in fact, the processors used assembly language, and luckily, we had people here who could still use that.
Oh, right.
I can't.
No one talks like that anymore to computers.
Yes, I know. It was an extraordinary amount of data and, amount of science for about a total of 30 gigabytes of data.
Wow.
It's actually a very, very small amount of data.
Has it all been analyzed, everything that...
Well, I would say that, it all has been looked at least from the point of view of the remote sensing teams. I know that for Io, I worked with the near-infrared mapping spectrometer data, and that is we're looking in the infrared for the volcanoes and the composition. And I have looked at every single pixel of data that has come down. So, there's still a lot we can do, as long as we have the funding to do it, but we are now in the deeper stages analysis
right.
Rather than the sort of first look.
So does that mean that everybody who's on this project, yourself included, is losing their job soon because the mission is over?
Well, actually, a lot of us in the science team had been, essentially, if you like to put it that way, we had lost our jobs last year because Galileo stopped taking remote sensing, that is, images or spectrometer data, back in January of 2002. So, in fact, I moved on to the Cassini project last year, but I'm still analyzing, as a second job, the data from Galileo. And we have data to keep us busy for quite some time.
Of course, the next big thing will be the Mars landing. In
January,
right?
Yes, yes.
The rovers are going.
That's going to be really exciting. In the beginning of January, January 3rd, we'll have a rover landing on Mars, and that's going to be very exciting.
Everybody's keeping their fingers crossed.
Yes, of course.
It was such you have a hard act to follow. It was so successful the last time, everything worked so well.
Oh, Pathfinder, yes.
Yeah, Pathfinder. You wonder how, I could be so 2 out of 2 on something like this.
I think what a lot of people don't realize is that, it's just not easy to do these missions and especially landers are very complex. We'll really keep our fingers crossed here, but, the more, even though, you're doing, the best possible job, it's still, there's a lot of complexity in it.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed with you, Dr. Lopez.
Okay.
Thank you for taking time to talk with us today.
Oh, thank you so much.
Dr. Rosalie Lopez is a volcanologist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and with help today from NPR librarians Kim Molesky and Alphonse Vinh. And, of course, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. where you can download past programs onto your Audible player, or you'll find Science Friday's Kids Connection there, which is a source of free science curricula and information on teaching science using Science Friday's programs. You can also email us and send us email at sciencefriday.com. A sweet and happy new year to those of you celebrating Rosh Hashanah this weekend. Have a great weekend. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.